It's going down, and you're invited for what they selling. We ain't buying. There is no running, there is no hiding. There's only fighting or dying. It's going down, and you're invited for what they selling. We ain't buying. There is no running, there is no hiding. There's only fighting or dying.
It's Going Down is a digital community center from anarchist, anti-fascist, autonomous, anti-capitalist, and anti-colonial movements. Our mission is to provide an autonomous and resilient platform to publicize and promote revolutionary theory and action.
Go to itsgoingdown.org for daily updates. Check out our online store for ways to donate and rate and follow us on iTunes if you like this podcast. All right, once again, this is It's Going Down Podcast. We're joined with somebody from IDOC Watch, which is a group out of Indiana. We're going to be talking about the situation that's happening in Indiana prisons right now. There's a hunger strike that's going on. There's a lot happening, and someone is here to catch us up to speed and tell us exactly what's going down. So do you want to introduce yourself and just tell us a little bit about IDOC Watch and what it is?
Yeah, sure. I'm Lily. I'm an organizer with IDOC Watch. We are a group in Bloomington, Indiana right now, in the works of being in Indianapolis as well. Our main goal is to foster inside and outside communication with prisoners to build solidarity and support resistance, such as the hunger strike right now. So that's a kind of a basic, just what we do.
Awesome. So the news broke a couple days ago that there's a hunger strike going on, but can you give us a little background information? I know that obviously in every prison, there's so much history, but just for people that are just tuning into this, what is the basic backstory for what's going on in Indiana prisons and what are the conditions like and what are prisoners, how have they been responding to it?
Yeah, so most of the folks that I talk to are incarcerated in Wabash Valley. I do have some knowledge about Indiana Women's Prison as well. But as far as, for the most part, a lot of the abuse that's going on is largely with false write-ups, transfers, food tampering, just like threats from guards. I've heard all kinds of stuff, health neglect, essentially, yeah, a lot of stuff that's going on in Wabash Valley right now with Shaka and other folks that I've talked to, is a lot of stuff with the guards, writing people up falsely, like doing cell searches, claiming to find stuff that's non-existent. Yeah. And then, some other, like food being tampered with, whether that's like spit, fecal matter, whatnot, threats to family. I've heard a lot about that. And that's mostly in the men's prisons that I've heard that from. As far as women's prisons, in Indiana, most of what I've heard has to do with PREA, with women, the like over criminalization of just any sort of touch is a big thing in women's prisons, where women will get written up for touching someone's hair, hugging someone. I've heard someone being written up and being sent to lock for hugging someone after their mom died or like a family member died. That kind of thing is mostly what I've heard in women's prisons. But yeah, that's kind of a general overview, but there's a lot.
Okay. And for those listening, you can go to idocwatch.org, and there's a website with lots of information, lots of write-ups about some of the stuff we're talking about. And before we get into the hunger strike, tell us about some of the individuals incarcerated that are working with you all. Because if you go on your website, you can see that you all are publishing stuff the prisoners are writing. There's updates about struggles that are happening inside. So what are some of the inmates, what are their stories that you're working with here?
Shaka is right now most of what our blog posts are about, obviously, because a lot of stuff is going on with him and the hunger strike. We work with in Gaza, Iman Bahar, who's also incarcerated in Wabash Valley. Aaron Isby is another person who kind of similar with some of the grievances that Shaka's had with food in Westville. He has a write-up about religious discrimination in Westville with kosher food. Yeah, so those are the main people who write blog posts right now. Yeah, there's several other people who we write to who aren't as active as like writing stuff, like political material they want to put out there. A lot of it is not always strictly political support either. Some folks just want someone to talk to. So we do that work as well.
Right. And what was the first individual you brought up?
Shaka?
Yeah. What's his story?
Yeah. So Shaka Shakur, he is incarcerated at Wabash Valley. So I started talking to him, and pretty much right off the bat, he was like, oh, this guard, like, hey, can you call my family to make sure my wife isn't dead, because of guards had, he had heard through people after guards had threatened him and like to harm his wife. So that was kind of right off the bat, like, wow, this person is like experiencing pretty severe repercussions for their political involvement while incarcerated. That was over the summer. And since then, he's had several more incidents where, it started out with that guard who was just continuously threatening his family. And then it turned into this other guard, John Sexton, who he was a CEO on the secure housing unit that Shaka was housed in. And late August, there was an altercation between the two of them. And this is after Sexton, the CEO, had been instigating him for months. And like in Gaza also faced repercussions. We have a post about this on our blog. And Gaza also faced repercussions just for saying that John Sexton was instigating Shaka, and like that this person is a known racist CEO in the facility. They wrote up in Gaza, stole his property, that sort of thing, in response to him just saying like what the situation was with Shaka. And so the altercation that I first brought up that happened in late August between Shaka and that guard, it's still like up in the air. They're in the process of going through to trial right now. He just had his initial hearing for it this week. So the claim that the facility is making is that Shaka loosened his restraints and attacked this guard. And Shaka, and like they're saying that he had laceration wounds and puncture wounds, which Shaka disputes. And to complicate this, they're like not letting Shaka see any of the videos to add to his defense. And so he's not allowed to see any of the security footage. He's not allowed to see any of the medical billing or the photographs of the injuries, which he says is not typical whenever there's an altercation. Usually the inmates are allowed to see the billing for the hospital and ambulance at least. Now he's being fined $3,000 for the like up in the air, like ambiguous laceration wounds and puncture wounds that he completely disputes, and they're not giving any information about to him. So that happened in August. And then after that, he was placed in a camera cell and has been in the camera cell for over 100 days, which is very, like, most of the time people who do a lot worse, he says, like, he even has like examples that he cited to me. I wish I had the letter, but for example, like someone had choked out a guard in the Miami County Jail, he said, really recently, and was in the 24-hour like monitored camera cell for less than 30 days, whereas he's been in it for over 100 days. And also John Sexton, the guard who he had the altercation with, is on his unit of the camera cell. So it doesn't really add up. If Shaka was really a threat to the guard, he wouldn't be placed on his unit again. So that's kind of like the background to all of this. And while in that camera unit, and also just like through, yeah, all of my interaction with him, mail has been a really big problem. It's not just with me. But they read in the mail, they make copies of it. They print it. They do the same with phone calls. He hasn't had phone calls for a couple months now because of the altercation, but they'll print off transcripts of his phone calls or copy his letters and hand them out to like share those with reactionary prisoners or just COs. And he's had problems in the past where guards will intentionally do that, like pit reactionary prisoners against him. So that's one of the issues that's going on while mm-hmm. he's in the camera cell right now. That's been an ongoing issue. And then on top of that, just like he has just had like inedible food given to him due to tampering. So food is the second issue. And then again, the guards that he had the previous altercation with that has been harassing him for months. John Sexton is back on his unit, as well as on his unit too. There's a family that is in charge of his unit. So it's like the McMillan. Hold on one second. I think he's the sergeant of the unit, and he is and this is like across the board, anyone will be like, I'm gonna stand with my guards, like no matter what they say about this prisoner, I'm gonna believe the guards, like that's pretty much across the board. But this just adds to it, where the sergeant on his unit he already says that, and then has free rein to make any claims without it being disputed at all, because his wife is the person that reviews the write-ups. And because this is in Carlisle, Indiana as well, which is like a 600-person town. So like the familial dynamics within that prison, as well as many others located in rural areas, is really like a huge conflict of interest, where prisoners actually have no opportunity to defend themselves. Just because, like, for example, with the, like, McMillans, he can say whatever he wants and his wife will approve it, whatever, approve disciplinary action. So a lot of times prisoners just don't have the resources or the networking to be able to defend themselves, which is a huge problem. But yeah, so that's a lot of the backstory of like why he's doing the hunger strike right now.
And this is the hunger strike that's happening right now at the facility at Wabash Valley.
Yes.
And is it just him, or are there other inmates participating as well?
Yeah, I've heard from his family that it's a couple of inmates. I don't know the name of anyone else that's involved right now. Mm-hmm.
Well, let's transition and talk about the hunger strike itself. There's an article that was posted on the IDOC Watch website, as well as reposted mm-hmm. on It's Going Down, about the hunger strike. It says several inmates are taking part. And this also has to deal, it mentions in the report, the censorship of the San Francisco Bayview newspaper, which is a radical black newspaper. It covers liberation struggles and especially talks about prison struggles and people inside, and it gives a voice for prisoners. Can you just talk a little bit about the strike and some of the issues around it further?
Yeah. So I'm going to read a little bit of a letter that was written to a person in the collective. So he writes, Shaka writes, "I have initiated a hunger strike as of the morning of 11/3/17. I've missed 5 meals as of 11/4/17 at 7 p.m. I'm not drinking any fluids at this point. I'm going to ride this out and push it until the issues are addressed by someone with the authority to do so and who is serious about resolving such before I pick up more charges. And by charges, he means the false charges that he's been written up on several times. There's another incident which was also in this letter that he was falsely written up for again, just to take it, like, yeah. A lot of the charges that have been written up so far are in an effort to diminish any contact with people outside and cut his good time. Like, he's had eight and a half years of his good time cut off or taken away. So that's what he means by the pick up more charges. And going back to the San Francisco Bay View, that was another issue that IDOC Watch had taken up, just the IDOC's censorship of Afrocentric literature, which has been going on for a while. Black publications such as San Francisco Bay View had been banned. They would get censored in the mail group, in the mailroom, as an SCG, like a security threat group, which would be like the same as like anything inciting violence or riots. Whereas from anyone that I've talked to, any sort of white supremacist literature was not declared an STG and was allowed through. So this has actually started going through now after we had a rally outside of IDOC headquarters over the summer. Now, after that happened, the San Francisco Bay View in particular is allowed through, and Shaka had received an issue of it on a Thursday that had an article published that we had written. And then that following Tuesday, he started receiving repercussions in response to that. Like, he says that at 11 p.m., his toilet started flushing every 10 to 15 minutes until 9 or 10 in the morning. So you get that kind of response from the prison officials, for him being outspoken, and him being able to see that, that he has an effect by him having like the San Francisco Bay View. That was an issue that he just wrote about and that has been really recent in addition to all the other stuff that's been going on.
Yeah, thank you for sharing. So is the Bayview still not allowed in the prison?
No, it has been going through. Some other radical literature has not been going through. I know there's some, I wish I remembered the name of it. And Gaza in particular has spoken on this, where he is unable to refuse something he's gotten for years. I cannot remember. It's a black communist publication, and he's gotten it for years, and now they just started banning it. So obviously, just because of the San Francisco Bay View being allowed in doesn't mean that blanket all Afrocentric literature is allowed in, but that's a huge problem in IDOC as well.
Yeah. I wanted to turn to a part in the statement I thought was really interesting. It says, "The construction of prison facilities in rural, economically depleted areas, which produce a situation that pits solidarity of largely white communities against predominantly non-white prisoners, and finally, the privatization of all aspects of prison operation and management. These trends mutual influence and extend one another, creating an increasingly antagonistic atmosphere, resolvable only through the initiative of prisoners taking all measures to reassert their humanity." What exactly do you all mean by this?
Yeah, so I touched on that a little bit with the McMillans, how there's like the familial aspect that you get in prisons whenever they're in really white rural areas in Indiana, where most, if not all, of the communities are white. So like there's that factor where such a small town like Carlisle, you have 600 people and you get a prison in your town that's going to give jobs to a lot of people in that community. And so there's bound to be conflict of interest with that. So you're specifically talking about that. And then with the corporate interest, like the corporatization of IDOC, we've really seen that in the spring. That was made really apparent. I think in April, I believe, the IDOC put out a statement that they're going to do a trial for a policy that bans all mail that is not on white lined paper in a white envelope, so that prohibits folks from sending in any articles, legal documents that aren't from like in a legal package, or like not from a person's lawyer. Just anything like a card, you can no longer send that. And then in the actual official statement that the IDOC put out, they say, yeah, we're banning all of this through the mail, but now you can do it through JPay, which is a private contracted company. And so now IDOC and JPay make money from folks sending in cards, pictures, that they are otherwise banned from sending in the mail.
One big question is, like, I mean, I think groups like IWOC, Incarcerated Workers Organizing Committee, and other prison abolition groups that are working around these struggles, I think a big thing is, it's like, what do people do on the outside when this happens? Like, and I'm curious how you all are answering this. I mean, like, what is the most effective thing to do for a small group of people without limited resources when something like this happens? Like, what is the best proper response? How can we mobilize to amplify the voices of these prisoners and also fight for the things that they're trying to do?
Yeah, that's a really great question, and something that I'm really interested in as well, which is kind of like a continuous question you have to ask yourself. So as far as like addressing prisoners' needs in the amplifying voices, I think that with like a small group of people, it's really important to utilize whatever networks you have, and obviously try to have as big of a wide reach as possible. And getting folks to call in is one thing. You know, it's like one thing to draw attention to abuses. It's like, and you know, hopefully really impact the prisoners' day-to-day lives, and make that better. But that's only half the goal, I feel like. You know, I think that you should utilize prisoners' voices and their demands and their struggles, and also be linking that to the larger struggle of prison abolition and making sure that folks realize that this isn't a one-off thing. This is just inherently prisons, like the violence that Shaka and Abuse Shaka is experiencing. I think it's really important to highlight that as well. And yeah, just making, I don't know, like we're trying to do that right now with our media sources, like maintaining our blog has been a really great tool. Twitter and Facebook and whatnot, you know, just publishing stuff, and like even the rally, like you can't just be doing media outreach or call-ins. That's great for some things. That's not the only strategy, the only beneficial strategy. So like I was talking about earlier with the rally that we had over the summer, outside of the IDOC headquarters, like that's another really useful strategy for uplifting prisoners' voices and demands.
Well, just going forward, what do you see as far as the path ahead in Indiana with the work with IDOC Watch? I mean, what comes next for you all?
Hold on, I'm going to think on this one for a second.
Both in terms of the hunger strike, but like kind of long term. I mean, just as far as like long term vision, but just, you know, the kind of organizing that you're doing.
With hunger strike, yeah, I think ideally that what Shaka is demanding is that he be moved out of the unit and away from the guards. You know, that's not going to solve the problem of him being incarcerated, but that's that's like a what he wants right now, and that's what we're fighting for. So the end goal for the hunger strike would be that he gets moved, and you know, he gets food that he can actually eat. So that's the end goal for our hunger strike right now. And then as far as for IDOC Watch, what our future looks like, I think a lot of what we're trying to do right now is, like, we already are in contact with some really rad prisoners, like Shaka in Gaza, who are, like, especially Shaka, just, like, historically is like known as a prison rebel. He's been involved in more than this hunger strike. Like, he has a long history of resisting in Indiana prisons. So, you know, he's like a vet to this. And so we get people like Shaka, who like knows what he's talking about. And it's really rad. And then, also we're trying to, you know, develop more people into people who are going to resist, people who would do a hunger strike, people who have like radical politics. So we're trying to foster that sort of dynamic in Indiana prisons, so that there is a stronger resistance inside. And yeah, so like consciousness raising in prisons, trying to form any sort of support groups where that could be fostered, sending in books, anything like that, where folks can like strengthen solidarity on the inside and form a better culture of resistance.
Right. And I wanted to turn now to a text that you all have on the website. It's called Prison Organizing: Reform versus Abolition. And for anybody listening to this that doesn't understand, you know, the difference, what does it mean to be an abolitionist in the terms of prisons and police? I mean, what does that word mean to you, and why do you use it in your organizing?
Yeah, so abolition to me is, and I get this from Mariam Kaba, I want to quote or cite her, is half dismantling and half building. I feel like building is a huge aspect of prison abolition, because you can't just say I want to abolish prisons and they be gone and society magically be fixed. So I think building is a huge aspect of that. And also just realizing the ideologies that are in play of what, like, how our society is set up that make prisons a reality. In making sure that we're fighting those, like capitalism and imperialism and patriarchy, all of those things are what make our society, like, think prison, or like have prisons, yeah, make prisons a reality, yeah. And so I think it's important to realize all of those, and fight those, but also that we are building, you know, movements and new systems outside, systems and institutions outside of prisons and outside of police, where folks are actually held accountable, where our communities are stronger. All of that is very important, and I feel like, you can't just have like some one-dimensional view of prison abolition or police abolition for that too, where just getting rid of those institutions would make our society better. So I think a lot of it is, affordable housing, education, all of that outside of prisons. And then a comrade in IDOC Watch, Mars, wrote the piece, Reform versus Abolition. And yeah, they talk about, let's see, I'm going to take a quote out of this because I feel like this really highlights what I think prison abolition means. And Mars is using the book, Captive Nation by Dan Berger. And he quotes Angela Davis, and she says, "Prisons will be abolished only when we have collectively built a new society and can collectively maintain a culture which places human needs over property rights." And yeah, I think that placing human needs and addressing that prisons don't actually address that at all. It doesn't address the person who's been harmed. It doesn't address their needs by any means. And yeah, it also is just prisons don't serve the function of rehabilitating people or making sure that people's needs are met. So I think that's important to realize also.
Well, anything else you want to add or talk about? There is information up on IDOC Watch and a couple places on IGD about how to support the hunger strike. You can call in and there's messages that you can send. Anything else you want to talk about? Anything else you want to address that we haven't touched on already?
No, I just want to reinforce that it would be really great for people to still be calling in. And you can find information about the call-in on our blog, on Facebook, and on Instagram. Our Instagram and Facebook are just at IDOC Watch or IDOC Watch on Facebook. And then the blog is IDOCWatch.org. So that would be great for people to call in and keep sharing all information about Shaka.
And did you already mention this? But he's escalated, I've heard, to a thirst strike, which kind of makes it dire that people really be making some calls.
Yes, that was a letter that we received yesterday. We weren't aware of that initially until last night. So that makes it even more dire and very worrisome. I know he has pre-existing health conditions already just from being incarcerated for so long. So that's very worrisome to us on the outside, as well as his family. So that makes it even more urgent and necessary for folks to call in.
Right. Well, thanks so much for joining us today and telling us about what's going on in Indiana. And again, please, if you can, call into the prisons, let people know to make the demands met. And thanks a lot for coming on.
Thank you.